Hello and welcome to the Derailed Podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Fred. And we have a guest today.
Hello, everyone. My name is Rudy.
Oh, welcome, Rudy. So this is episode 7. And yes. We just finished, well, not just finished, but a couple of days ago played 4-player Cologne. And Rudy, it was your first time playing Cologne. So what did you think of Cologne?
Yeah, so just some context for our listeners. I would be the one that they referred to as the worst CEO in the history of
of humankind.
somewhere in episode 1, it's where I promptly stopped listening at that point. they've invited me to the show tonight, and I'm very very glad to be here. It was only my fourth or fifth play of an 18xx. Mm-hmm. Game. Very much new to it, even more so than our gracious hosts.
Yeah, so we just invited Rudy yet, so we have someone worse than us to make fun of, basically.
I wouldn't say that. He did not do
Yeah, you see, I like to think that I've redeemed myself to a certain extent by finishing second.
Yes.
So at least I'm now the third worst CEO, if that counts for anything. It was a tremendously exciting game. I really, really enjoyed, you know, throughout the game, I knew it was close. Mm. You could just feel that you couldn't really tell who was leading at any point.
No.
And I felt pretty good about my chances, especially towards the sort of second, third of the game.
Mm-hmm.
After a very tentative start. You know, it's the first time I played with mergers in an 18x game.
Yes.
So that was a new concept to me that I didn't quite sort of wrap my whole head around from the start.
Mm.
It was only really as the mergers started approaching that I could see the implications. And therefore, I think I held back a bit at the start, played more of an investing game,
mm-hmm.
Which is something I haven't really done before in any of my other plays. And it sort of worked out quite well for me.
Yeah, I wouldn't say you got off to a tentative start, because the way the seed drawing happened, you acted before Chris. And every single action you took, Chris was like, damn, Rudy, I wanted to do that.
Yeah, so Fred and I, for some reason, have both decided that we want to try the investor strats.
Yes.
We want to just sit back, have a nice relaxed game where other people run companies, and we just get to sit there and judge who's doing it worse than everyone else. And there was one of the private companies is the kind of private you see in a lot of 18xx's where it sort of has a big revenue payout but doesn't do a whole lot else.
Mm.
And I was like, I'm going to buy that one. And Rudy straight away was, I'm just going to buy this.
Yeah.
And kind of...
So that was your game plan, and Rudy just took it away from you.
Yeah, I was actually toying with the idea of not even starting with one of the miners at all.
Oh, interesting. Yeah,
yeah, and I never... Then I thought, oh, well... Now I kind of have to.
Yeah. Just for some more context on that, this specific play of ours. So it was me, Chris, Rudy, and Simon. And the scores at the end were, I say this every time, but I'm always surprised at how close the scores are. So Chris was first, then Rudy behind him by something like 70 points, then me behind Rudy by 100 points, and then Simon behind me by about 1,000 points. So
by points, you mean cold, hard German Deutschmarks.
Yes, that's what I mean, yes. Yeah, so very, very close. And I must say, I kind of underestimated you, Rudy, when looking at the at the money and the shares. But I thought it was going to be Chris. I thought Chris had it. And then I thought I would be second, but then, yeah, you took second away from me. So
no one expects
well
to be
played.
Picked at the post by the world's worst CEO.
Yeah. You see, my real-life share portfolio doesn't really paint me in a very good light. I've had some major losses, so I wouldn't say underestimating is... I'd say you were spot on in your estimations. I just exceeded expectation.
So you don't come second in real life trading.
No.
But this was our first. Fred, this was our fourth play of Cologne, actually.
But the first time we played 4-player.
Exactly. And what stood out for me with the 4-player the most was the certificate limit.
Yes, and the cash at the beginning. Right? Mm. Remember, you and I both said, I'm so low on cash after that initial auction had finished. We had no money left, which I found striking. So yeah, I kind of always have it in the back of my mind to do investor strat, but for some reason this game I just jumped into the merger potential companies. So I got two of the green miners at the beginning, I think.
Which is interesting because we had sort of decided that that's something you should never allow anyone to do.
Yes.
Is to get total control early on of one of the mergeable companies. Mm. So I think you started with something like 40%.
That's right.
Of the green company. Yeah. And I was like, oh no, mistakes have been made here.
Yeah, I did. And you didn't have any.
I did. I had the...
You had the private that gives you a share in the red company.
And I also had one the of directors, the red miners.
I think you had the director's share in the
red. Oh, did you?
Okay. I had the red miner director, yeah. Which gives me 30%, I suppose, which isn't too far off of the 40% that you had.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, I have to retract something I said because I think a couple of episodes ago I said that Cologne felt like more of a map game to me.
Mm.
And this game felt very much like a stock game.
Yes. Well, you were a lot more active in the stock rounds this time, I think,
than
you
were. And I feel like we all were. I don't know. I'm really his first time, I guess. But I don't know. The stocks were insane in this game. I mean, the stock rounds were so involved and they went on so long. And we were doing so much buying and selling. And
yes.
Yeah, and this game felt like the stock round was a lot more significant. I think it was the squeeze of that nine certificate limit that we were constantly jockeying for. Where can we best invest ourselves? Right. Which I suppose you should be doing in every game, but I think that if your stock limit is 15 or something, you have a lot more, there's a lot less great companies that you want to be in. Whereas in this game, I found that your own company, you would kind of question if it was worthwhile having shares in.
Yeah, I think, when the stock limit is lower, like with a higher stock limit, if you see a good company, you can just buy a share in it. With a lower stock limit, you might have to sell something before you can buy that extra share. So there's a more of a decision there, maybe.
And we hit that limit much faster than we normally do.
I was definitely in that position a couple of times where I had a good performing company, and it was a decision whether to sell that stock into something that could potentially get me more money.
Yes.
So it wasn't necessarily selling out of bad investments. It was selling out of a decent investment, trying to weigh up whether...
Yeah,
whether
for
something
a potential
else would,
better one.
Yeah. And that I found to be quite an interesting decision. Mm. Another move that, you know, something that occurred to me, especially towards the latter end of the game, was I think it happened a few times where someone actually bought a share and so all during the same stock round, bought a share and then in a later turn sold that same share to push the price down, which I found was quite interesting. Obviously, you can only do it one time. But that's something that never really occurred to me before. It's another way that you can manipulate the stock price.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily cost you anything to do that, but it is opportunity cost. So oftentimes there's competition for the best share, or you go into a stock round and everyone wants a piece of the blue company or the pink company or whatever. So just spending time trying to tank someone's share price can...
Yeah, there's obviously the opportunity cost in terms of turn order, because you generally do that towards the end of the stock round when no one can really do anything else.
Yeah, exactly.
Turn so you're giving up your,
your
potential
turn order can be a big
first to fourth. Yeah,
the other reason we did it in this play was if a company's 100% player owned, the stock price goes up at the end of the stock round. And I think there were one or two times where someone sold a share just to not have a company be 100% player owned.
Yeah, so what I found interesting about this game was that it felt like there was an element of managing your own perceived strength, if I'm saying that correctly. Mm. So Simon had this company and he had 60% of it and it had amazing trends because he withheld.
Mm.
And then we all kind of sat there like, well, this company is going to earn massive revenues. In the beginning, we were like, oh, let's get a piece of this.
Mm.
And then we realized that we all each had like 10% of it and Simon had 60% of it.
Which is the max, yeah.
Which is the max for this game. So we were just like, well, actually, I don't know, maybe screw this. Yeah. You know, we're each going to get 10%, sure, but that's... So the rest of the company's dividends is split between all of us, but Simon's there getting 60%. And then it became in our combined best interest to make his stock appreciation way worse. So we all just started selling off those shares because we thought, you know what, we can't really stop him from getting enormous gains from this revenue-wise, but we can influence the stock.
Yeah, I think there are situations where if you have 50% and I have 40%, it's good for me to buy a share in whatever company so that we're 50-50, because that means you gain nothing over me in that company. So instead of allowing you to get to 60 versus my 40, then you're gaining two shares worth over me. To have it even, then you gain nothing over me. In that case, like Simon is already on 60, so it doesn't matter what we do. But if we do buy shares, then it's going to just go up more every stock round because of the player owned percentage. Yeah. So in that case, it's probably good to not own that share.
And I think if one of us had forecast perhaps a little bit earlier the potential of that share, I think we've all been kind of greedy and waiting for it to drop because you kept withholding. So we thought, I'm going to wait for this to get to the bottom of where it's going to be and then buy in. Mm. But because we all had that same mindset, we all ended up with 10% of it. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of us had 20%. So it then became not worthwhile. If one other player had gotten in for 40% of that, they probably would have allowed it to keep raising up. They would have reaped the big dividends and Simon getting a little bit extra would have been fine.
Mm. Yeah.
But it's because it ended up split between all three of us. So we decided no, I'm not really.
Yeah. And we were also doing things like, so the red and the green company were the good performing company stock wise. We were trying to get them because we were heavily invested in them. We were trying to get them player owned and things like that. So we were spending those stock slots, the share of the nine on that as well, I think. Yeah, so but Simon did something really interesting. I made some notes again.
Good.
So Simon did something really interesting. So yeah, the other thing was in this game, the trains went super quickly at the beginning.
Mm. Yes. Like
very, very quickly. I think the quickest we've had trains go in a game yet, in a play yet. So Simon did something which I thought was really smart. So he had the gray company initially, and then he dumped it on you, Rudy.
Yes.
Which just before it had like lost its train, so you ended up having to spend some money to buy its own new train.
Yeah, so I definitely preempted Simon's move. Mm. I could see that this was potentially something that he would do, and for reasons unbeknownst to me at the moment, I didn't act upon that information. And he dumped, well, it was still a very functional company at that point. It had a very good rail network. It was paying out very good dividends. And I think it was sitting with 2-3 trains. And this was just before we went on to the sixes, I believe. Was it it's a six that rusts the three?
Yes.
Was it the five? Six?
No, six rusts the three, yeah.
Yeah, so I think there was potentially one more five left in the pool. So we were about to go on to the sixes. And I could see that he was trying to launch the pink company at that point and buy into a diesel train.
Yes.
That move potentially cost me the game in the end. He then dumped the gray company with its 2-3 trains on me, and it only had one more operating round left before those trains rusted.
Yes.
And I ended up being about $60 short, 60 mark short of buying a six train, a permanent train into that company. Yeah, something that's different in Cologne, I believe, to some of the previous games we've played is the ability to trade in a train for half its face value in order to buy a new one. So that was sort of my plan. And I don't know if my maths were just incorrect. Potentially, I just didn't think about it. I ended up being short even with that sort of subsidy from the trade.
You mean short in the company's treasury?
In the company treasury, yes. And then I was forced to pay in the difference in the next round from my own cash, which I think I ended up paying 200 odd.
Yes, more. Yeah, because you can't supply that 60 from your personal supply until it's an emergency train.
Yes,
so you can't do it
exactly
while you have those trains.
Exactly. So and then I lost out on the ability to trade in.
Exactly.
And I had to pay in the full difference. Yeah. So basically the trade-in value plus whatever difference I was left over
with.
Yeah,
and it was about 200, yeah. So I think that's one of the reasons the trains went so quickly is because we all kind of wanted to use the upgrade ability of the train before it rusts, which is clearly smart, I think. But
yeah, and I think in general, you know, they always say the more experienced you become, the faster the train rush gets.
Right.
Yeah. And newer players tend to not push the trains nearly as fast as experienced players. Mm,
yeah.
And I think the more that we play, the more we're going to see that we do push the trains faster.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, but just getting back to what Simon did, the reason he dumped that gray company is like you said, it wasn't a bad company. He didn't dump it because it was bad, but he dumped it because he had a plan, which I thought was quite clever. He then bought the president share of the pink company, or the RSE in this game, and he set the price at 80. And I didn't realize it at the time, but that was super smart. He clearly had this planned all along. So a bit later in the game, like he set this par value for the company and didn't have enough money to float it immediately, which should have rung some alarm bells for me. I found it weird. I found it like, why would you buy that and then not, when you're not able to float it? But that's because he wanted to set the par value. And then later on in the game, when the 8 trains became available, the diesel type trains, they cost 800. So then he floated the company and he immediately bought a permanent diesel train with that that company, which I thought was pretty smart.
Yeah, and that diesel train also rusted all the fours, which is what made it pretty brutal.
Yes, yeah.
Because we were all kind of thinking, ah, the 8s are going to take a while. And then Sam went, boom, bye, cheers. Yeah. And I think he did that knowingly because there were a lot of 4 trains floating around that game.
So
despite me having to have paid in the difference to get myself that permanent 6 train, the Grey Company then operated very well for me throughout the rest of the game. So I still made a very good return on it. And I'm still sort of wrestling with this decision whether that was the right thing to do, potentially, you know, selling out of that company before it got dumped on me or going with it.
I think if you saw it coming, it might have been good to just, how many shares did you have? You only had 2.
I only had two.
So maybe just sell down to 1 share and then you're safe. Because you ended up paying 210, I think, from your personal money to you. And you lost the game by 70 to Chris. So there could have been some opportunity cost there as well that we're not taking into account. I don't think you could just add that 210 onto your score at the end to see whether it would have made the difference. But yeah, it's definitely something to consider. Yeah, there wasn't really that much dumping of companies this game. Like, it didn't feel, the company dumping didn't feel brutal to me this time. Like, you dumped Blue to me late in the game.
Yeah.
Which I was happy about because that actually gave me an extra share slot.
Yes, and that's something that, you know, we were discussing afterwards that we hadn't necessarily taken into account, the importance of those president's shares.
Yes.
In, especially when the certificate limit is that restricted.
Yeah.
That being worth 2 shares adds a lot of value to it in and of itself.
Yeah.
You see, I dumped the Blue Company because I felt like I could better invest in other companies. I didn't even dislike it. It wasn't a bad company. It felt like a mediocre company, I suppose. Or it felt like my money could be better spent elsewhere.
Mm. Yeah, so I think like when you kind of do that math in your head, you have to count that president certificate twice.
Absolutely.
Like, because if you dump that certificate on someone else, when you've hit the certificate limit already, you can only buy 1 other share. So you have to take that into account, which is interesting, which we hadn't really considered before that much.
No, I think in my head it was just Blue Company versus Grey or Green or Red or whatever. Yeah. Not really considering that I was giving up 20% of Blue for 10% of another company.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which is, I think, the key difference there. And I'm sure, most likely an oversight on my part, that probably was not a good return on investment.
I don't think you did badly with it. I think you still did better with what you did than you would have with Blue. But it is something to take into account. Yeah.
I feel like an argument could be made that it would have been good for me to sell down to 2 Blue shares.
Right, and just keep the president.
Just keep the president certificate. Yes.
Yeah, because I was not unhappy with gaining the extra certificate slots. I was trying to think, what am I going to sell? I don't want to sell any of these, but I do want to buy whatever share. And then you just gave me a free slot, which I was happy with. So
very nice.
So I didn't feel bad about it at all. But I still don't think it was a bad play on your part. I think you still made profit from that whole thing.
I think it was better overall, but I think the most optimal play probably would have been selling down to 20%.
Yeah, just for that search slot. I think those double share certificates are very valuable now.
Well, if you think about it, with the Blue Company, I could have just kept running that train for 2 shares. I mean, the dividends wouldn't have been big, but the stock would have kept going up.
Mm.
And I suppose the argument to be made is if I sell down to just 2 shares, I'm actually not gaining an extra slot if I get rid of that 2 share, essentially.
If you get rid of the president.
I am, but it has to be worth double, and I don't think that would have been the case.
Yeah,
I don't think that I could say the stock appreciation from Blue would have been more than half of the stock appreciation in a share in something else.
Yeah, and I think that's what you have to take into account.
Yeah, it's definitely a lesson learned in terms of the critical value of those president shares.
Yes, yeah. So what I also found interesting is at the end of the game, so the red and the green companies, which are the merged companies, were way up there in stock price. Like red was at the absolute max on the stock price chart and green was one behind it. So Chris, you had 40% of red and 30% of green. Rudy had 60% of red and I had 60% of green. So we, like, if you just look at the top two performing companies, like you had 70% of the top two, I had 60 and Rudy had 60%.
Sure, yeah.
Which is, yeah, very interesting. And I was at my max. So the I was heavy into green and there weren't any red shares for me to buy. And that's all I wanted to do was buy a red share. Like I would have given anything to buy a red share. And so that's something I should have done earlier in the game, is get into that other merged company. Just buy one share, just even if I just had one share.
Yeah, the thing about red and green is they start pretty high. They start slightly higher than the available par values. They start at 120.
Mm.
I think the highest you can par it is 100. Mm-hmm. And they just ran the whole game. I don't think they withheld once.
No, they didn't. But my point is more like I was maxed out on 60%. Like, there was one green share available to buy and I couldn't buy it.
Oh, right, yeah.
So for that reason, I need to get into red earlier on so that I can, like you had 70% of the two top performing. Red and I were both capped at 60%. We couldn't buy more if we wanted to. Well, you could have actually. You could have bought the red, the green share that was available.
I sold green at one point.
Yeah, I wasn't happy about that because that made it not player owned.
Yeah, that might have been the reason I did it.
I think it was.
I play way too much in spite. And I think that comes back to haunt me.
Yeah, but it was funny because the merged companies had kind of almost like a boring trajectory. They didn't really pay big dividends. They weren't incredible. They just had a very consistent stock price that just slowly crept up over the course of the game.
Yeah, and their stock prices kept going up and they were at max at the end of the game.
Yeah, so they didn't necessarily have the best routes.
No.
They just had functional routes that kept on running and paying dividends. And they
Their dividends were some of the weakest. And really, they were just worth holding on to three or four shares or whatever you could get because the stock jumps got bigger and bigger towards the end.
Yeah.
Which is something to consider as well, because the stock jumps are, I think 10 is kind of the baseline. And then in the middle of the chart, it sort of goes to like 15. Mm. And then right at the end, there's as much as 30 with those jumps.
Yeah, especially if it's player-owned, because then it jumps in the stock round as well as each operating round.
Yeah. But red and green quickly, they were at the top, so they never really... Yeah. They didn't get too much of a bonus from that.
No.
As it turned out, yeah.
They did hit it anyway, the top of the chart anyway. Yeah, so... I don't know if you want to talk about... So you had one of the red miner companies that wasn't doing anything for a while. Do you want to...
Oh,
Chris's rags to riches story.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this was interesting because Simon and I had this big debate about the miner companies and he was saying they were very strong and I said mine was pathetic. But I think what was interesting to me is that I had the same viewpoint as Simon in that I felt like the miner companies are a great place to start.
Mm.
It feels so low investment, right? You pay like $200 and you're running routes and laying track and you're in the game. And it feels like you gave up so little of your own money to do it. But the fact that they pay 50-50 actually sucks.
Mm.
I don't know why. For some reason, I kind of thought that was good in a way. But it's not. It's terrible. You'd much rather they pay full.
Oh, yeah, it's sort of terrible both ways.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't give you enough into the company or into your private stash to really do much with that money.
Yeah.
So they give you shares. The nice thing about them is they give you shares in the merged companies.
Yeah.
And those shares are always going to be worth some amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
You don't necessarily need to control the company, but it's worth it just for the share. But for me, the problem with that is shares, when you buy them early, increase in value.
Mm.
My shares stayed stagnant for ages because mine was a red company.
Mm.
Until they finally appreciated much later. But that was 200 and something marks that was just tied up for ages. Because what happened to me was those trains got pushed really fast. Mine got rusted. And it wasn't really worthwhile, I felt, for me to invest in that company. Because the train rush went so quickly. By the time it came back to me, it was only a 4 train I could buy for that miner. Which is 300 of my own money. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to see the kind of value I want to see on this.
Yeah.
So in the end, that company was terrible for me. I think I ran it 2 or 3 times, got minimum dividends. And then it was worth the stock price later on, in the sense that it was worth 240 when it finally merged, right? Because the stock starts at 120 and it was worth 20%. But the problem was is that I could have had that money working for me
Yes.
for ages before that. And that is the issue with it.
I think that's a very good point. Their share price doesn't go up until they merge.
Yeah.
So in the meantime, you could be floating another one of the companies and getting that share price to increase. And maybe you can even overtake the red and green share prices at that stage. You probably could. Yeah.
I mean, generally in these games, you don't really want much in the way of money in your personal player pool because it's not doing anything for you.
Yes.
You always want your money to be growing in some way.
Yes, absolutely. You always want it in stocks or something that's going to pay you at the end of the game.
So on paper, I put in 210, I think it cost for that miner. Maybe I got 60 in dividends if we're generous, and then it was worth 240 when it floated. So we can say, okay, great, you made like $100, right?
Yeah.
But that's on paper. The actual opportunity cost of that is much greater because now that 200 could have made so much more than $100 for me over the course of the time I bought that miner and the time the red company merged.
Yeah, you could have done the same by almost just buying two bonds with it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing, the red company stocks become available.
Mm.
So I could have just spent the 240 on them and been in a much better position because that money would have been working for me before that point.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that miner really, really kind of sucked for me.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, so the two things I regret doing is, like I said, in this play, was not buying a red share early on. I should have got into the red company early on just because of that cap of 60% you hit in the major.
Mm.
I think you have to be invested in both majors to have more than 60% in the two majors, which is what you did. And then the other thing I regretted was during that first auction round, I never bought a private company. I just bought the two big green miners, which gave me 40% of green. Which, like you said, we always thought is a mistake to have allow someone to have that. So I thought, I'm able to do this, let's do this, since it must be good for me if it's a mistake for you to allow me to do that. But yeah, I think for the same reasons you just said, it turns out to be not that great. So I really regretted not having a private because I wasn't getting very much income before the next stock round. So there was basically nothing I could do in the next stock round.
Oh, it was brutal for me. I had like 200 sitting in that stupid treasury that I knew I'd never be able to access. And I had zero money in my player cash.
Yes. Yeah.
And I wasn't paying dividends.
Yeah.
So all I was getting was like revenue from my privates. Yeah. It was slowly.
And I wasn't getting that up. Even.
Yeah, so after my trains got rusted on that, I stalled majorly.
Yes.
I stalled majorly. Yeah, what am I saying? I really doubt I had 300 to even spend on a train if I wanted to, actually.
Yeah.
No, I think the fact that Chris still ended up winning the game from that position of absolute misery is a...
Yeah, because everyone was laughing at me because I was legit miserable. I spent every euro collecting 25 or something for my private incomes.
Yeah. What did you think of like comparing three player versus four player of Cologne?
I thought it played super differently.
Mm.
And I say this every time, but I always wonder, you get this idea of would it play the same way another time? Right?
I don't think it would. With the same players at the same player count, I also think it'll play differently. But yeah.
Yeah. So the three player game felt like a lot more of like a map game to me.
Yes.
And this one felt a lot more like a stock game to me.
Yeah.
Like the map was quite chilled in this. I don't know. I didn't feel like there was a lot of blocking. The stationing didn't seem that hectic. We weren't really competing over routes that much.
We didn't really have tile scarcity either.
Yeah. No, and also the map was much less built out. I do wonder if it's because it was one mana that was basically doing nothing for so long. Because I just stopped laying track. I'm like, I don't know how this is going to end up. I'm not laying track for you guys.
Mm.
This is doing nothing for me. So,
Just coming from my perspective of having only really played 1830, 1889, the map tightness was not nearly as intense for me as with those plays.
Yeah.
Or the tile scarcity. 1830 stood out for me in terms of never having the tiles available when I needed them. I don't know if that's just the hallmark of the 1830 design specifically. If
1830 in particular does have pretty brutal tile scarcity.
Yeah, that is definitely noticeable. I felt that even the choke points on the Cologne map in terms of the river of the,
yeah, the river,
the Rhine that runs through the middle of the map. And I think there's only the 4 crossing points. I thought that would be very tightly contested, and I don't think it really was. I guess because you can sort of join up and, you know, maybe we weren't aggressive enough with station placements.
But I do wonder if it's also a function of us having pretty diversified portfolios. I mean, I think especially between the 3 of us, we all had little pieces of each other's companies. Yeah. And it got to that point where, I don't know, it didn't really matter who was running the company. We were all just playing for like small edges in the stock market, essentially. So we weren't too concerned with blocking people off because no one was a major threat except for Simon.
Mm.
And even then with Simon's company, you know, I pointed out that thing. I was like, ooh, we could block him here. You know, so that's the thing. Simon was the only company that was a threat to everyone.
And Simon also didn't really have shares in the company we all had shares in.
No.
Like we, the 3 of us kind of had shares in each other's companies and things, and Simon didn't. So we were kind of not incentivized that much to block each other as we were to block Simon, because he was kind of,
Which you'd think would generally be a winning strategy, to veer off,
yes,
you know, steer clear of what other people are doing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think Simon towards the end of the game started hitting a stride, you know, floating the company he did late on and getting it access to this massive network with a permanent 8 train he could run. I think if he was able to run that same route for longer, I think he only ran the full 8 stop route once. Once or twice as we finished the game and broke the bank. Yeah. If he was able to do that for more rounds, he had a clear monopoly in that company.
Yeah, I think that game was interesting in terms of Simon's trajectory, in terms of, for me, it highlights the importance of timing. But I think that's very difficult to do. I don't necessarily think that I could have done any better. But he basically withheld for like 1 or 2 rounds too long, if that makes sense. So his strategy was basically to withhold, buy incredible trains and run these massive revenue routes. I think if he had one more set of ORs, he could have won with how much revenue he was generating.
He promised me that he was going to pay dividends in that round.
That's why you bought chase.
He lied to me.
But that's the thing, right? But the game just ran out too soon, so he built this engine, but he didn't get to run it enough times, essentially. And I wonder, in terms of those late game trains, how often people do get to run those. I feel like oftentimes with 8 trains with diesels, you get a couple of runs and that's probably it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to take into account the bank and the bank busting, because as an absurd example, if your route is half the bank, the maximum you'll be able to run it is twice.
Right.
So you have to kind of take into account, like, if I'm going to run a massive route at the end of the game, is there going to be enough money to pay me for this route?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of nuance to that timing, I think. In terms of, and also because you're giving up all that share price as well.
Yes.
Every time you withhold.
Yeah. Did Simon buy a private in the auction? I don't think he did, eh?
Ooh.
So I think that's another small mistake he made, because I think he pretty much just passed the whole first.
Oh, he did. Round. He didn't buy a miner either.
So, yeah, he didn't buy a miner. He didn't buy a private, I don't think. So he was just kind of waiting to make that big play at the end, and that's also missed opportunity, I think, at the beginning of the game. Like, you have to do something.
Yeah, you need your money to basically be accruing more money in some way, always.
Yeah.
But I think there's something to be said for, I don't think you have to buy a miner.
No, I don't think so, but you should at least buy a private company and get something from that in the meantime.
Yeah, you need to do something.
Because you can't buy bonds yet, so you can't buy any of the other certificates yet. So that's what he was kind of waiting for.
And I think it depends on the texture of the map in terms of whether it's worthwhile to float any of those companies in the first round.
Well, you can't do it in the auction round though, right?
No, but that's what I'm wondering. If you hoard all your cash and float at the minimum.
Yeah.
I think it depends on their position though. I'd have to look at the map again to see.
Well, for the reasons we said, like with the miners' share price not increasing until they merge, it might be a good play.
Oh, I definitely think there's something to be said for being the guy who floats a company early and sort of ignores the miners. Definitely. Because I'm not sure about the miners. I mean, I feel like, look, from our experience, I can say that for me, I could have won that game without having a miner at all because my miner sucked. It was a detriment to me rather than
advantage. As long as you have shares when the shares become available, yes.
Yeah, but I could have just bought those.
Yes. Yeah, no, I agree with that. You know, your miner wasn't doing much.
Yeah, so you definitely can win without miners. I guess the question is, I don't know. I guess we'll have to play it 100 more times and then figure it out.
Yeah.
Is there any argument to not have any of the private companies at the end, or at the start of the game?
Well, I didn't, and Simon didn't.
Yeah, so I mean,
how many privates are there?
I guess as
three.
A minimum,
three. You two.
I bought two. Yeah.
You had two. Rudy had one. Yeah. Simon and I didn't.
And I had the one that couldn't actually be bought back by a company.
Right, but it. Yeah.
But gave it paid me big a very good revenue every round. Yeah. So I guess it pays for itself. But you know, as a minimum, you should be aiming to buy that for a company to buy that from your private ownership for double the value.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, as a minimum, you should be getting 100% return on your initial investment.
Yeah. I could be wrong, but I feel like none of the privates can be bought by a corporation in Cologne. I think it's not just yours. I think it's none of them. You can.
Oh, that would be.
But there was something that was different about yours.
Rudy's closed.
Mine closed
when the sixth train was bought.
Yeah.
Stops.
And the others?
I think the others closed, I think maybe one step earlier, like when the fives were bought, okay. Something like that. Yeah.
So that makes sense. So it pays big.
I think it pays 30 and it costs 250, right? So if you bought three of those bonds, that would pay 30, but it takes up three slots and it's 300 instead of 250.
And it lasts longer than the other privates, so
So I think Simon had a cool strategy in the last game of this we played, actually, where, and I think again, he lost just due to a timing issue.
Mm.
So he bought a huge amount of those bonds. I think he had like seven of them or something. And it actually worked out pretty well because they were accruing some amount of money for him, but then he also could sell them all at once and float two companies if he wanted to. You know, he had massive amounts of cash. And I think he waited one stock round too long to pull the trigger because I bought the company that he wanted to float.
Right.
And I think that if he had floated that company and run it for longer, I think that he would have won that game.
Yeah.
Which was also just a slight mistiming, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, I was wondering about those bonds, just in terms of how good a long-term strategy they potentially are, seeing as they only pay, I think, was it a fixed 10?
10 every ORM.
Which isn't great. I mean, it's a 10% return on your initial investment. So you
can always sell it back for the same amount.
Yeah, I guess what makes them attractive is that, you know, it's not a share in a company that could potentially be dumped on you, leaving you with this, you know, empty shell.
Yeah.
It's just a way to store away your cash, still earning a return on it for a couple of rounds as you potentially wait to float something.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's like anything else, really. You have to decide if that return is greater than a return you're going to get on something else.
Yeah. I'd like to imagine that you should be aiming for more than 10% return on your money at any point in the game, though. So that's why I never bought into them.
Yeah, well, it's strange. Like when you first explained the rules the first time we played it, Chris, about these bonds, I was like, oh, that's awesome. But I don't end up ever really buying them. Like I've maybe bought one or two every now and then. But I think it's only really there. It's a cool thing that's there. If there's nothing else you can buy, then buy a bond. Then at least you're getting something for your money instead of nothing, you know.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot about reading the texture of the game as well. If someone's about to withhold or you feel like they're going to, or, you know, you don't want to open yourself up to the company being dumped on you or something like that, then, it's a kind of a safe investment. It's a very safe investment, but it's not the best one.
Yeah.
And I guess it's been designed in that way.
Mm.
It's there if you want to play safe, but you're not going to earn as much as you would by taking a risk.
Yeah, very tactical, situational.
Mm.
I just thought of something. Cool at the end of the game, when you count up your shares, do you count bonds?
They count, yeah, you do.
Because theoretically, the bank is bust. The bank has no more money. Who's buying those bonds from you?
I imagine you just value them at 100, yeah.
But why?
Well, because theoretically, the bank is never bust, right? It's never actually bust. When the bank runs out, you still run ORs and you still collect income.
Right, okay.
Even if there's no money left. Yeah.
Guys, the government just bails the bank out. That's how the world works.
Yeah,
it's
essentially just an endgame trigger. Yeah.
Yeah, no, okay, that's true. That's true.
But the problem with those is they count towards your certificate limit as well.
Yes. Yeah. And you can usually do much better by buying actual shares than the bonds. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think those probably are more of a factor in the lower player counts as well.
Mm.
When you've got a little bit more room to wiggle in terms of certificates.
Mm. Yeah. It takes you longer to hit the certificate limit.
Mm.
Yeah.
Have you gone through all your notes?
I have. Yes. That's all of them.
Yeah. Well, Rudy, what are your, since you are a newcomer, Fred and I have spoken a lot about Cologne in particular, I think.
Yeah.
What were your impressions? Give us like a final thoughts of it.
Yeah, so like I said, I really enjoyed our game just because of how how epic it felt. We had that tightness throughout where you couldn't really tell who was winning. That makes for a really exciting finish. Of the ones I've played, I probably wouldn't recommend it as a starter game just due to the added, you know, wrinkles of the mergers. And but I mean, it, you know, getting the rules down, you know, we went through the rules in 10 or 15 minutes. So just having the background of playing, you know, your base 1830, I think overall, you know, fantastic experience. I'd say I've only played it with four, which, you know, didn't feel overly punishing or tight or anything to me. I think it was a good player count.
Mm. Yeah, we have now played it every player count and liked it at every player count as well.
Yeah. Now, which one would you want to play next, Rudy? Which 1806?
Well, probably, I know you guys have spoken about Rhineland, which adds a few more
additional things. Yeah.
But that adds a lot, though.
It does add a lot. I wouldn't think so, but it...
I would love to revisit 1830. Okay. I think that was one...
Yeah, that could be cool to do.
Yeah, that left me with a lot of wrestling with my decisions afterwards. I think that was the worst CEO ever performance. So I do have to redeem myself.
I'm keen to play that one as well, because I'd really love to talk about it on the podcast, because it's one of the available ones. It's one of the classic ones. But we've only played it once, and I feel like I would have much better perspectives on it now with a little bit more experience than I would then. I actually don't remember very much about that.
I mean, I've been playing a lot of Brass lately, and you know, it doesn't compare to 18XX in any way, shape or form, other than, you know, it features some trains and laying track.
Well, then we'll allow it.
But yeah, I want to be on the Brass episode. It's probably my favorite game of all time at the moment. But, you know, something that again becomes more and more evident to me is just the importance of manipulating turn order. In Brass, it's so important to constantly be on top of what people are spending, so that you can slot in at the right. I probably lost the game this weekend to a more experienced player, and you know, it shows, because he was able to preempt what I wanted to do and just made sure that he could do it before I did.
Oh, okay.
So he sort of, you know, I had to sell cotton to ports. I was going to build myself ports, and you know, he could see that happening, and built the ports so that I fed his ports with my cotton and flipped his tiles.
Yeah, so what's interesting in the Brass player turn order is it's whoever spent the least money in that round is first the next round. Yes, is that right?
Correct.
So 18 Rhineland is a little bit similar. In 18 Rhineland, the turn order is the player who has the most money left at the end of the stock round becomes priority deal, which is interesting.
Which I found interesting because it felt almost a little bit more controllable than the person to the left or the last person who passes.
It makes for interesting decisions. Like, if I buy the share, I might not be first, but, you know, or maybe I should just sell the share and so that I am first.
It's very interesting. But Rhineland, that definitely felt like a step up. That is... Yeah. There's actually quite a lot of layers of complexity to it.
Yeah, and it's a long game as well.
Right.
Even though there's no extra like little fiddly components or anything, it's literally just different rules with the same set of stuff. But it changes a lot.
You wanted to discuss some feedback.
People are listening now.
Well, first of all, it's fantastic that we got feedback.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So thank you so much to everyone who has been listening, who is listening now. We kind of recorded a bunch of episodes before we really, I want to say, like, went public or actually started promoting
before,
it at all.
Before we really put it out there,
because we wanted to make sure we were on all the podcast networks and we were sort of fiddling with our audio quality and stuff like that. So, but yeah, it's been so nice. I think all the feedback's actually been really nice.
It's been great to read it.
And I think people are very understanding that we're new. So some of the veterans have reached out to me and said, you know, maybe consider this, or you got this wrong, but not like you're an idiot. What are you doing? You know, leave it to the professionals. So yeah, I think that 1806 is a small community, but it's actually quite a welcoming community, and I think that everyone's just excited anytime there's more content, more anything, right, to potentially grow it. I think everyone's happy with that. So yeah, it's been really, really nice. But I just wanted to highlight a couple of things. So a nice dude by the name of Jonathan Pickles on Facebook reached out to me and told me that I was wrong in that 1889 thing where I was like, oh, you could have done this and you could have won.
Yes.
You know, when I was being all smug, not really, but so he actually said that you cannot, because you had two trains in one company and one train in the other company, you are not allowed to willfully violate the train limit. So you wouldn't have been able to sell the one train to the one with two and then just discard one.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's a real like rules nuance there.
Interesting. And it makes a lot of sense actually.
Yeah. Yeah. So my idea was you just sell the train and just bin one of them, right? But he was basically saying you can't do that.
Oh, okay.
Like you could have potentially withheld all the normal stuff, right? But the train limit violation is sacred.
So you, so if you have the train limit, you can't buy a new train unless you do an upgrade? Is that
the rule? That's something that I'm interested in as well, because yeah, so if you have like a 5 train and a 4 train, can you buy a 6 train and get rid of the 4?
Mm.
Or do you have to wait for it to rust? Which is something I feel like we need to check.
Yeah, we'll have to check on that.
But I don't know if he just means literally transferring between two companies.
Yeah, maybe like you can't buy from another company, but you can buy from them.
I feel like you should probably be able to upgrade and just bin the...
Yeah. Well, if it's an upgrade, if it's like one of the games where you get half of your train...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, then you definitely can. Yeah. But I feel like even so, I imagine you probably can do the other way, but it's probably something that we would...
Okay, interesting.
We would want to check. Yeah. And yeah, otherwise, thanks to everyone who's sort of just given us a ton of feedback and things that they liked or... Yeah, mostly... positive, I'd say.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we got a tweet from the legend himself.
Oh yeah.
JC Lawrence, who's kind of he's a stalwart of the 18XX community.
Yes.
Yeah, kind of just well known as a very veteran player, but also someone who spends a lot of time talking about the game, writing about the game.
So you mean he's a superconductor?
Exactly. Yeah. Really just rolled his eyes so far back. I thought he might go blind. Yeah, so but JC was very nice. He reached out to me and basically mentioned that something we haven't spoken about that I would really like to actually talk about in the next episode is the idea of emergency train bars being planned.
Okay.
Yeah. So because he linked me to one of his blog posts where he talks about, which is quite cool because it actually breaks down the numbers.
Oh, okay.
Of why it's actually beneficial. So, because that's something I know we've discussed privately as well. We've been chatting about that, this idea of, because I've heard JC say before that he has now tended towards a strategy of never withholding.
Right, yeah.
Which I think is very interesting. And it's something that I've wanted to try and kind of figure out and pull off because obviously it's a lot better because withholding sucks, right? Yeah. So, but he linked me to one of his blog posts where he talks about the numbers and stuff. So, I think we could talk about that in the next episode as well, which would be really cool.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, because I'd like to give that a little bit more attention. Mm. And the last one that I wanted to chat about was actually, I don't know if you've seen it, these guys called Board Game Informants. I think they're quite new, but they've been posting some 18XX videos on YouTube. And they tweeted at us saying they'd love to hear some stuff. I think they're also pretty new to the genre about speeding up play.
Oh, okay. Of things 18XX you can do games. To speed up play. Yeah,
yeah, basically like things you can do to make it faster. And, yeah. Which I'm very interested in, or have been very interested in, because I always try to get you guys to play with me on a weeknight.
Yes.
Which is why all the 18XX games I've bought are kind of the shorter ones and the things that we can reasonably fit in on our Thursday nights. So just to talk about, I just wrote a quick list and I'll try to go through it quite quickly. The obvious one is Poker Chips.
Yes. Yeah.
I think everyone knows that one by now. The paper money that comes with the game is...
Yeah.
It's functional, but you really don't want to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're working with money so much, or so often. It's like everything you do involves taking money or giving money or something. Even a small difference there makes a big difference for the whole game.
Yeah, and I underestimated how big that impact is.
I think our very first game was paper with paper money.
It was. Yeah. It was.
It adds a good hour.
Oh, yeah. It makes a noticeable difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And these don't have to be expensive or fancy poker chips. I'd say just get some with edge spots so that you can count them a lot easier. You know, people talk about dice chips, which are those kind of ones that you get in the big silver cases that everyone has kind of seen, which are relatively cheap, but actually fine and perfectly functional.
Yes, better, still better than the paper money for sure.
Yeah. A lot better than the paper money.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other one I wanted to say was a revenue tracker.
Yes, you got us a nice one.
And I feel like that's helped a lot.
It does.
So what this basically is basically a chart of every conceivable kind of cost per share that you could be paying out dividends.
Right.
So it kind of goes from like zero to 70 something like that, right? So how this works is that you will, most 18xx games have this on the board already, where they have that number and you put it on there to remember how many shares you paid last time and you adjust as you go. But what's cool about the one that I got for us was it actually has every share dividend payout next to it as well.
Right. Yeah.
And it's spaced nicely and separated with lines and stuff. So you can see, okay, 4 shares of 7 is this much, or 6 shares of 54 is this much. So you don't have to use a calculator. You just look at the thing and immediately pay out all the dividends. And it makes it much, much faster in my experience. Because we were doing that on our phones with calculators and whatever.
Yes.
Which is fine. But again, it's one of those things where since you're doing this so much, shortcutting that process again and again just makes it much, much faster over time. Yeah. So the one that I got is from railsonboard.com, which is a blog.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a great one there up for free that I'd recommend that one.
It's really nice.
It's really, really nice. Yeah.
I'm thinking if you can print that out and, you know, stick it on the wall in like a big size so you can actually study it while other people are taking their turns.
That'd be pretty cool, actually. Yeah, if you could make the small numbers big enough to actually see, you'd have to blow it up pretty huge.
Yeah. Or maybe just have a one on your phone that you can zoom in on.
Yeah, true, true.
Yeah.
Just print one for each person, I guess.
You could do that as well,
yeah. Yeah, so this one is going to make me sound like a moron, but I'm going to say it anyway. I have found it much easier to calculate roots in terms of ones instead of tens.
No, I don't think that's a moron thing at all. That's an excellent tip.
Yeah, I don't know why my brain, it just somehow dividing by 10 takes much longer. So if your root is 60 and you go 10 plus 20 plus 20 plus 10 or whatever, right?
I it's a weird thing. I don't know why. Maybe it's because maybe it's easier to remember small numbers than it is to remember big numbers.
Yeah.
Even though the last digit is a zero, it shouldn't make a difference.
Exactly. But I've just found it much quicker to count my roots like that.
Yeah. So instead of counting like 20 plus 30 is 50, you just go 2 plus 3 is 5 kind of thing. It's the same thing.
But yeah. So you just count them as you go, like 1, 4, 6, 8, 12, 15. And for some reason, that for me is much quicker.
Yeah.
And then I just add the zero at the end.
Yes.
So top tip for you math morons out there like me, but give it a try. Maybe it'll help you. The other one, I suppose, this is fairly obvious, but I find myself not doing a lot of the time, is just try calculate your roots ahead of time. You know, so I think when you're used to that board gamer kind of mindset, you can kind of wait for your turn and then look and say, okay, what am I doing?
So that share price tracker is also good at that. Like we kind of, what we've started doing now is during your turn, you pay attention to what tracks the other people are laying or upgrading and whether it affects your route or not. And if it does affect your route, typically it'll add 10 to your payout. And then we've started moving that payout marker as we play, just to like, okay, this person upgraded it, so my route is now worth 10 more, move the marker on the board. And then we don't even look at the routes unless something drastic has changed, like a station blocks you or something like that. But yeah, you can just keep track of what the previous payment was and any changes to it, you just keep track of at the time and then just do the payout.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is much easier when you upgrade it for an extra 20, you just add 20, assuming nothing major has changed.
Yeah.
And the last one, I wrote spreadsheeting the final operating round. So we don't actually use the spreadsheets, but this does make it a lot easier to just sort of, and especially when you have the revenue tracker as well, you just look at it and you say, okay, the bank's definitely going to break this round. We can see that. And the rules are you finish this set of operating rounds. So everyone just take your current revenue that you earn for each thing and times it by the number of shares you have and times by the number of operating rounds. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can just do that on your phone calculator and then add your money and your share prices and sort of end the game there.
Yeah.
And it's a lot quicker than going through the motions of running the payouts, especially when you can see that you're going to last 2 more ORs, because you can often predict that as well. 2 more sets of ORs, rather.
Yeah.
You can see, okay, it's not going to run out this round, but it is going to run out the next round, definitely. So everyone times by 6.
Yeah. I think that's where the spreadsheet might be a little bit quicker, is you can instantly see on the spreadsheet how many sets of ORs you have, whereas we kind of have to calculate it. But that's something that happens once per game. So if that takes 5 minutes extra, that's 5 minutes for the whole game.
True.
Whereas something like poker chips, if it adds 10 seconds for every single transaction, that's 10 seconds times 2 per person times 4 people times how many ORs in a game. So that adds up.
I'm not at the level yet where I want to bring a laptop to the table, but Yeah. So for us, it's been easier to do that just with phones, but it does make the whole thing a lot quicker. And then you don't spend the whole end game just running out the bank, which can be a little bit boring as well.
Yeah.
You kind of shortcut the least interesting part of the game.
Yeah.
So we all just kind of accept that, yes, we could maybe increase our routes here and there by 10, but it's going to be a wash. We can all kind of probably increase it by 10. So we just say, okay, we'll just do it from here and use the current revenue price, unless there's going to be major changes to the map.
Anything else?
No, that was it. That's all I could think of. I don't know if you have anything you can add to that.
I think the other one is just a general board gaming tip, is think about your turn before it's your turn.
Yeah.
Choose your friends carefully.
I think most 18xx's know to think ahead.
Yeah, I vet players by giving them a bit of like a differential equation, you know, and then I see how fast they can solve it in their heads.
You gave me a Rubik's Cube.
Don't do differential equations.
I don't know what a differential equation is. It just sounded mathy.
No, but don't do them on alcohol. You should not drink and derive.
Oh, my word.
Oh,
Someone call the pun patrol. Arrest this man.
Mad bombshell.
Wow.
Sorry.
I'm going home. Let's end this.
How many listeners did we lose?
Lost all the listeners now.
Maybe we can derive how many people just quit the show forever after that point. Yeah, but I think that's it from us for this week.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us, Rudy.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
It was fun. It was
cool.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. Good night.
Cool. Cheers.
Cheers.